power on.
The following is a presentation of the Sovereign podcast feed.
The man of tomorrow, Savzu, the rated R radio star, Dr. Brian Sovereign here for, well, this is something I was half tempted to just make this exclusive to Patreon, but I think it's a larger subject that a lot of listeners actually want to hear about from me. And I know I've gotten a lot of questions about it. And also, as I do work heavily with generative AI, and that is the key phrasing here, generative AI. It's kind of funny, right? We had artificial general intelligence forever, and which is AGI, which is like Skynet, right? And now it's just amazing that the term ended for the AI that many people who decide to deal with this are dealing with right now, which would actually be GAI instead of AGI, which, like I said, kind of fitting, right? Generative AI. Anyway, I have to work with that on a day-to-day basis. And so I get a lot of questions from listeners. You know, what do you think about this development in AI? What do you think about this development and so on? And I mean, people ask me, you know, tech questions all the time anyway, for very obvious reasons. In fact, you're listening to the most obvious of them all, that being my show. But, you know, I thought it would be a good idea to kind of like, a few months back, or a couple months back, maybe, well, we're in March now. Anyway, kind of like a bit back, I think it was in December, when I did an update on the crypto space, which is certainly on a roller coaster ride once again right now. I thought it might be interesting to really get in a AI update. And in some ways, it's really a general tech update for 2024. And the reason I say that is every tech giant is just running full steam. You know, like, I mean, they're just going to get generative AI or AI in general, automation of some kind in front of the average consumer as best as possible. Okay. And so one of the common questions I get is, which one should I use? And I want to answer that question here. If you want to use one at all. Also, what I wanted to kind of touch on is where the tech giants are right now, because it's always an interesting place, but it's particularly a very interesting place in the past year, year and a half or so, because generative AI became so disruptive, that it definitely tipped the scales for some, you know, in their favor. For others, obviously, the opposite end of that spectrum. So I thought we'd get into that. And then maybe when we get closer to the end of the year or going into 2025, you know, we'll do a check-in and see how things shaped up. Now, there are a lot of tools. This is the hard part for people to really, you know, to really understand. With generative AI, and when we say generative AI, we're talking about ChatGPT, LLMs, right? Large language models. You know, Google's Gemini, you know, all of these Anthropic, we're going to talk about Anthropic, you know, all of these different models. A lot of people, I don't think, realize that the tools that they see out there that are available that will, say, help them write a blog post or will help them do XYZ with a picture or something like that, that these are usually, aside from like with, you know, say with generating pictures like Midjourney, these are usually just front ends that are accessing some of these larger, you know, LLMs like ChatGPT, like, you know, and potentially even Gemini in the future and so on. Okay. So in one sense, it seems like there's an explosion of generative AI because it's everywhere, but at the same time, it's really not. Because, you know, even Microsoft, right, with what used to be called Bing Chat, but now they just call Copilot everywhere that they slap it, is really just using, you know, ChatGPT 4, or for Turbo, you know? And so you've got it, like, there needs to be some clarity on the idea that, oh, everybody's, you know, making AI stuff. No, they're not. They're really, even Apple, which is something that I might even want to start this off with, even Apple is having to, for lack of a better term, and certainly I don't necessarily want to be using an insensitive term, so I'm not going to say kowtow, I'm going to say they're having to bend the knee to Google, which is, in my mind, fucking hilarious. Okay. So, and also disappointing, by the way, and I want to get into that. Okay. So generative AI has, like I said, been around with us for about a year and a half. It really hit stride in the second half of 2022. It's kind of hard to believe it's that quote unquote young. And at the time, certainly for the first year, I think that there was a lot of FUD, a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt getting spread about it. And I feel like that is largely cooled off basically because, you know, like there aren't these perceived giant leaps happening anymore, right? Like, you know, OpenAI isn't releasing new models of ChatGPT or at least new version numbers necessarily. I mean, yeah, there's 4 and then 4 Turbo, but they're not like releasing ChatGPT 5, even though there's some rumors that that'll be out soon. But regardless, okay, it seems to have kind of cooled off, even though people are still, you know, getting duped and kind of blown away by, you know, posts that people are making on TikTok and Instagram and whatever else. Now, you know, what is the issue, say, with a lot of those kinds of posts? The real issue isn't that the generative AI is impressive. The real issue is the platforms themselves, that being, say, Instagram, TikTok, and other social media, right? It's the fact that this can be spread so easily, inexpensively, and readily that makes all of this confusing. It's not that people can't, with enough time, really tell the difference, or time and focus, really can't tell the difference between what's AI and what's real. It's more that there is a way that the average person has been conditioned to consume information over the past 20 years that is significantly different for the previous, you know, 20 centuries. So that's really the problem. It's not that, and this is, again, this is the key thing that I think a lot of people aren't getting, and people are getting better. You know, even me, like I am on Instagram and I am amazed at the humdrum, you know, accounts that I don't think are bots, but it's just kind of everyday, whatever, frustrated people will comment on something shared by an account and they'll instantly call it out that it's AI. Like people already are picking up that these things are not that good. And these things are also not developing as fast as some might expect. You know, like these LLMs and so on. Okay. And let's be clear, large language models, again, that's really all we're talking, or that's largely what we're talking about here when we're talking about AI. And it's the more specific term that should be used, right? Because there's things that quote unquote AI does that are not based around the idea of text and context. You know, it's just an automation. It's not something where you input language and then you get language back necessarily, right? Which is more very layman's definition, say, of an LLM. Okay. So LLMs, you know, like ChatGPT, Google's Gemini, what used to be Bard, they already changed the name. And I think that was a very smart idea because Bard was a fucking horrible name. Okay. That, you know, those are LLMs. Again, you know, to my point, like people are already recognizing this stuff and it's fortunate to see. And they're not only recognizing when something is AI, but I think most people like I was going to get to are recognizing that this is not becoming Skynet and the potential isn't even there, which is exactly what I said when I first started talking about AI over a year ago. Is that these are artificial bullshit generators. That's all they are. It's not intelligent. And if anything, there are complaints and some collected data to suggest that, you know, even like ChatGPT, including GPT-4 and Turbo, are seemingly getting throttled back in the sense that they're getting dumber. Now, what's behind that? Is it, you know, is OpenAI making it dumber so that the, you know, the cost of keeping the lights on at OpenAI is lower? Or is it that there's so much AI generated content now and that it's constantly pulling from, say, from that, that it's garbage in, garbage out? Maybe. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different theories around this. I haven't exactly experienced where any of these LLMs have seemingly gotten dumber, but I have run into their roadblocks where, you know, oh, I can't talk about this subject, or I can't, you know, I can't get into that. Or, you know, like if you're asking for something that doesn't even have to do with sex, but might be relevant, say, to cultural or religious studies, and it just won't go there. Okay, which is nonsense, but it won't. Okay, but regardless, the overall point I want to get here is that pretty much since the last time I really focused an entire episode on AI, which has been about a year, fortunately, I think people have come to their senses, and they know that this shit isn't going to take over, not in the Skynet sense. Okay. Could it, you know, make everybody stupid and lazy? Oh, sure. Of course. But I mean, every technology can do that. Regardless, let's talk a bit about what's going on in the present landscape of AI, because again, we want to get to the, well, for some, for me, would be the ultimate question of which one should I be using if I want to use these things? Okay. Well, let's lay out some of the major players here. And the major players at first would be, of course, the quote unquote king, or by the numbers of usage and subscribers right now would still be king, that being OpenAI's ChatGPT. Now, understand, again, many of the generative AI tools that you find out there are really just accessing ChatGPT. Microsoft's Copilot, which you would argue would be another player, I'm going to list it as a player, but really, they're just using ChatGPT. They just rebrand it, reskin it, and Microsoft foots some of the bill, even though you still have to pay for these things. And or if you want to get the full power of them, you have to pay for them. You have to subscribe to them. And I'll talk about that. Then we get into Google's Gemini, again, which used to be Bard, but now it's Gemini. And this is another one where companies like Samsung and maybe some others that we'll talk about are using this, and it's important to bring up. And then I would say that the third, or if by the numbers that we're going, the fourth player here would be Anthropic's Claude, which version 3 just came out. Okay. Now, what tech giant owns Anthropic? None of them own them, but much like Microsoft has a massive investment in OpenAI, thus ChatGPT, and thus Copilot uses ChatGPT, Amazon has a major investment, and AWS is the major cloud provider for Anthropic's Claude LLM. Okay. And we'll talk about Claude shortly. I want to say that there is at least one other player that I think is worth talking about. And certainly the company itself is, in many ways, the single, and it's certainly been proven more even this past week, is the single most important company when it comes to generative AI, is NVIDIA. Now, they have a slightly different option available, and that is what's called Chat with RTX. It's a horrible name, but it's only horrible in that it doesn't really roll off the tongue. It is actually great in describing exactly what it does. If you have an NVIDIA video card, okay, either of the RTX 30 series or the 40 series, you can run a local LLM, as in it's not in the cloud. You can run it right on your machine, feed it your own data, and use that. And that's NVIDIA's Chat with RTX, okay? And I absolutely want this to be a part of the conversation because it deserves it, and we'll get into why. Okay, now, there are other open, you know, you might be saying, wait a minute, why aren't I bringing up Facebook's Llama and Llama 2? Okay. That is worth bringing up. And certainly Facebook is also a player in this, and you can see where they're baking in generative AI into Facebook proper, into particularly into Instagram, where you can generate reactions and all kinds of stuff. I mean, right when you go into Instagram direct messages, there is an option to use, an LLM based off of Llama right there for all kinds of things. And it works kind of like a digital assistant, and quite a bit more. Again, it does engage in generative AI for you, creating pictures and, you know, stickers and all kinds of crap. Okay, so it's worth being in there. Also, Llama and Llama 2 are models that were either leaked or open sourced and are available to a lot of open source options. Okay, for LLMs that you could also run locally or run off of a server. This is a space I'm not really going to talk about here, because while the setup often isn't too complex, feeding it the data and data sets and all that, like, that does become more complex. And basically, if you're already in that space, you're in that space and you're already doing it. And I don't know if there's necessarily an advantage to me talking about it. Okay. And in some ways, I think that chat with RTX is actually stealing a lot of the thunder, certainly from an ease of use standpoint. It is stealing a lot of the thunder away from these open source models. Okay, so I'm not going to get into those. Also, I think a lot of those still have a ton of catch up to do to get anywhere near to where, but you also need a lot of, I mean, they need some heavy duty hardware. As to where chat with RTX, we'll talk about it. The system requirements are actually fairly slim, comparatively. Okay. So, you know, Facebook is part of it, but I don't think people necessarily see it. Facebook's options get more interesting. Like Llama gets more interesting in what the projects that are building, that are using it outside of Meta, I should say, not Facebook, outside of Meta. They're not one that I'm really going to talk about here, because what they're creating, and it's not, and also they're not like a subscription model that you can exactly use either, like Copilot or ChatGPT, and so on. So they're not really going to be a part of the equation as far as that goes. So let's talk about these things. Okay. I will admit that in 2024, I was really, really waiting to hear what Apple had in mind, because Tim Cook this year has regularly stated, we are going to do groundbreaking things in AI. We are going to be, and everybody was expecting, oh yeah, we're going to bring AI. iOS 18 is going to have AI fucking everywhere. The new version of macOS is going to have AI everywhere. It's going to be in all of iWork. It's going to be all over the place. When the M3 MacBook Airs came out, Tim Cook said that this is the best consumer AI laptop or AI computer in the world right now, which, you know, to be clear, okay, this leads to us talking about NPUs. I want to get into that. All right. But I was waiting for Apple to make some kind of a move, because they were talking so much. And if anybody, you know, Apple has this trend, historical trend, of letting other people really do the innovation, even though they claim they're the ones that do it. No, but letting other people do the innovation and then they do the perfecting of it, right? Whatever that innovation is, if it's actually something worthwhile, they will perfect it to where it makes the most sense for the consumer, developer, user, whatever. Okay. And they really do, like, they do that. They do a great job of that. Okay. Like, credit where credit's due. Apple absolutely makes the best hardware on the planet. The best hardware. Okay. Software, maybe a little bit of a different conversation, but they certainly do very well there also. Okay. So again, credit where credit's due. I will admit that I was expecting, I want to start this conversation with Apple. I was expecting really great things from Apple on this, partly because the concept of an NPU, neural processing unit, which is what AI, these like generative AI and whatever else could actually take advantage of, because really an NPU is no different than a GPU, right? GPU, graphics processing unit, that graphical processing unit. A GPU is basically your video card, right? Whether it's from NVIDIA or Intel Arc or something AMD is doing, whatever, okay? Anything that, that plays, you know, that helps you play your games and do your video editing and all that jazz, okay? That's a GPU, all right? NPUs are really just very efficient GPUs. They're no different. Like, GPUs are far more powerful than NPUs, okay? NPUs have been a part of smartphones for a very long time, and now, due to the boom in generative AI, are becoming a big part of desktop/laptop computing. And particularly, like, I think with AMD, it starts with, what, the 7840 HS, and then you have... like the Intel, what is it? The 13, it's the 13 series, but it's the one with the HX, at the end. And that one, you know, there's a lot of debate. I mean, here's the problem is that a lot of these companies are coming up with different marketing, effectively telling you, oh no, this is the first AI chipset. This is the first AI computer and whatever. And you keep hearing like different marketing speak around this, but ultimately, you have there was a part of the 13th gen of the Intel Core series that did have NPUs built into it. AMD's been a bit more ahead of the curve on this with their Zen 4 architecture. Their Ryzen 8 series also all have NPUs in them, as I understand it. Okay, here's the rub with this. Okay, now there's certain things you can do on a smartphone that clearly take advantage of an NPU, and that's why an NPU has been around for so long. You think, for example, like say on a Pixel device, how, and actually you can do this on pretty much every smartphone now, it doesn't just need to be Pixel. But you can do, you know, like the magic erase with Google Photos, right? Where you can remove stuff from the photo. Okay, that's taking advantage of NPUs. That's why, you know, when you install Google Photos on an iPhone, you can do the same thing. It's like, wait a minute, I thought this needed Google's hardware. No, it just needed NPUs to do it in a way that makes sense from a power draw perspective on the device. Okay. So, the funny thing is, as far as desktops go, as far as, you know, desktop computers, PCs, and even really MacBooks and so on, there hasn't been a great argument for why the fuck there's NPUs inside of them, you know, because ultimately when you get to desktop class computing, you have a few things. One, it's very much the norm to have the thing plugged in all the time. So you're not so much worried about that power efficiency from an NPU. The GPU is more powerful. You already have a GPU there, which is already doing a ton of things, you know? So like an NPU, what is it doing special with a computer? That right now, that's a very open-ended question. And to some degree, Apple's reluctance to push AI, generative AI features on, say, you know, on MacBooks or whatever, I think comes from that, well, what do you do on those that's so damn special that requires that? Now, I mean, MacBooks, you know, because I think a lot of people were like, oh, wow, Apple's way ahead, and myself included, wow, Apple's really ahead of the curve on already having NPUs in their MacBooks ever since the M1, you know, which came out a few years ago. Really, the only reason that their MacBooks have NPUs is because the M series chips are just, you know, redesigned A series chips for you know, the iPhones and iPads, right? So it wasn't really foresight on Apple's part that they knew AI was coming, you know, or something like that. It's just, they're already there. So, okay. But this is what's really sad, is that their infrastructure is already so ready for usage of generative AI, but software-wise, they're well behind the curve. In fact, they're so far behind the curve that now we have reports that have been corroborated by multiple sources, okay? It's not just, you know, Mark Gurman at Bloomberg, that Apple plans for its implementation of generative AI in its ecosystem, you know, whether it's iOS, macOS, and so on, that they are actually, when it's a task that requires access to more power than the device locally has, which, I mean, I applaud them for wanting to do as much on device as possible. Okay. I think that's the right direction to go. that it's going to access Google's Gemini LLM. Now, I mean, I'm just going to call it right out. Like, this is so fucking disappointing. Like, I was really, really, really hoping that Apple had a Series Ace up their sleeve and that they were going to do something fucking awesome. But instead, they're just going to access Google? What the fuck's the point to using Apple devices if you're just going to access Google? I mean, seriously, like, yeah, I use an iPhone. Okay. I have an iPhone SE 3 right here. Cheapest one I could find. I mean, and part of the reason that I got this, it wasn't because it was the least expensive. I got this because it's the smallest fucking phone you can find that actually gets regular security updates. That was the most important thing to me, frankly. Okay. But there's a lot also that the iPhone does really well. I mean, I love AirPods, you know, Apple Wallet's great and Apple Card, all, you know, all that jazz. Like, I really dig all of that. Okay. But you know, the other aspect of it, of why I got it is one, like I hate Google's software. I cannot stand Gmail. I cannot stand Google Maps. Google Maps is fucking annoying. And really, as long as you're in the US anyway, Apple Maps, in my opinion, it's better. Better design, better just implementation overall, the way that it gives or delivers the directions to you and so on. I love it. I don't love it like love, but you know what I mean. Okay. Far superior to what Google does out there. The other part I love about iOS is you can uninstall even Apple's apps from it, you know, with a stock. And I say stock, we're not talking about Graphene OS or Lineage OS, whatever. Okay. A stock Android device. No, you're fucking stuck with Google's apps. Like, they're going to be on there. Google's going to track you. Google's, you know, that information's going to Google. Okay. Now, there's parts of where Google does some things right. I mean, Google Photos is impressive as far as its quote-unquote AI abilities, okay? Google Fi is still the premier, you know, telco that you can get at. I mean, it's an MVNO, but it's still the premier telco that you can get access to. I think that's great, okay? Part of the reason they're allowed to exist, though, is that they do anonymize a lot of your data and so on, which is far better than handing it over to Verizon, because if there's anybody I can't stand more than Google, it's fucking Verizon or AT&T for that matter, or take your pick. Okay. But it just goes to the point, like, you know, part of the reason a lot of people use Apple is they fucking hate Google. But then Apple's just going to, you know, bend over and grab the ankles for their LLM. What the fuck? This is really disappointing that they wanted to do this. Now, I've heard some commentators make the, you know, make the argument that, well, you know, this might be like Apple Maps, where, you know, for a long time, Apple did rely upon Google Maps. Like, it was the option for iPhone for many years until they released their own. And the argument is that maybe they released Apple Maps too early because it wasn't ready. And I get that. Like, and I made the jokes myself on Sovereign Tech about how bad Apple Maps was at the time. That is no longer true. It's a solid competitor. And again, in most ways, it's actually superior. So, you know, is this a repeat of that scenario, but in perhaps a more beneficial timeline, in the sense that, okay, we'll use Google for now, but in the future, we will release our own, which we know that Apple's working on their own LLMs and they're buying out AI companies that will help with running all the stuff locally. Maybe that's so. Maybe this is just like a you know, they're just biding time. This is a go-between. Okay. Like, I kind of get it, but that's still really disappointing. And it does not give Apple a very good look. Because this is something that they were, you know, maybe this is them discovering that their strategy of letting everybody else figure out the innovation until they can perfect it. Maybe this is them realizing, we can't work that way anymore. I hope it's them realizing that, because otherwise, honestly, this is a very moribund company. This is a company that feels like, it feels like IBM, where, you know, 30, 40 years ago, where like the innovation's happening all around it and it's just dropping the ball. So I'm really disappointed in that. And I was honestly waiting to see, like, you know, I've talked about, I have a fundraiser going right now because we need some new equipment, new hardware. to take this show, to take everything Sovereign to the next level. Okay, get us on YouTube. Get us everywhere that matters. And have whole new shows, whole new series, okay? All kinds of stuff. And you can check it out, fundraiser.sovereigntech.com. It's running right now. We're over the halfway mark on that. And it was only asking for 5,000. We are over, thank you to Sovereign Tech listeners, we are well over the halfway mark on that now. And that's awesome, okay? Now, part of me was waiting to see, okay, what's Apple's play here? Because if Apple was going to do a big ecosystem play and they had something really fucking impressive going on in their hardware, in their software, I should say, then I would be jumping hardcore onto Apple's hardware. But I'm kind of glad I got the answer when I did. And the answer is not Apple. The answer is Google. And that's fucking disappointing. But I was waiting. I was getting that close. I'm like, oh, yeah, yep, MacBook Pro, we're going to go all the way because Apple's, you know, probably going to perfect this and do it right. Not right now. Really disappointing. So, you know, I start off talking about Apple in this, in that they're not, in my opinion, and who knows, maybe they'll do something amazing, you know, by the time we get to WWDC in June. But they are not just behind the times, they're out of the picture. Like, if you're asking me what's the best generative AI options, you know, to run with, it's not Apple. I mean, they don't have anything to offer right now anyway, but also I am not impressed by what's on offer. You know, if it's just going to be Google Gemini, which has its own problems. So there we are with Apple. Let's keep going down the list on this, okay? I guess since we're already talking about Google Gemini, let's talk about Gemini. Gemini has the opportunity to be a very big deal because of not so much individual users, but more so with like Google Workspace, right? More so in the enterprise space, where I think it could really shake things up and really change things because so many people use Gmail. So many people use Google Docs, you know, your Google Sheets and, you know, Google Drive overall. You know, so many people use Google options that, they could be incredibly disruptive in this. That said, Gemini has pretty much been the weakest of as far as its ability or its abilities, its generative abilities. It has been the weakest and the most fraught with, you know, some problems, which I don't need to spend a ton of time on. Like, everybody's freaking out that, oh, it won't generate white people and it won't do this, whatever. Anyway, all of that program, quote unquote, wokeness and whatever all that crap means anyway, aside, it's still just the worst at what it does. I get the worst results every time. You know, there's just there's too many issues with it right now. And they really should have been the ones that were paving the way with this. And we know through Meta, actually, that LLM technology has been being developed by the tech giants themselves, except for maybe Apple, for an incredibly long, for at least a few years, at least 5-6 years or longer, maybe up to 10 years. Google should have been way ahead on this. Now, the argument would be that, well, they knew that there would be, you know, potentially societal concerns around the use of this technology. And to, you know, to be clear, they may not be that wrong, even though I think people are getting used to it pretty quickly. But They still should have been way ahead of the game, and they're not. Now, also Gemini, yes, could end up replacing Google Assistant overall, and that seems to be in the works. That's certainly an interesting area as well, because certainly Google Assistant is really the only virtual assistant technology that gets any decent use. Even then, it barely does, but it does get more use than, say, you know, like Apple's, you know, Siri or... I mean, I guess Amazon's, you know, gets used quite a bit, but that's really a different demographic, than the tech enthusiast overall, I would think. So, and obviously Cortana's basically dead. Regardless of all of that. Okay. Yeah. Gemini is just not up to snuff. Okay. Now LLMs like Gemini, like ChatGPT, like Microsoft's Copilot, are at the point now where to get the latest features, like sometimes generating pictures or getting you know, kind of premier access to the latest LLM models or LLM versions and so on, you're looking at, and it, what seems to be the standard is spending $20 a month on getting access to these things. There's free versions for all of them, but to get the real deal, you got to hash out $20 to get all of the features. You got to hash out that $20 a month. That seems to be the standard. Honestly, that's cheap for the processing power, the resources, the expense of the resources needed to do what LLMs do. That is, I mean, you know, you can say to yourself, oh, wow, like I don't even pay that for Netflix. And I don't, well, okay. But well, Netflix might come close to the resource power of LLMs, but in general, nothing else comes close. Okay. When Sam Altman asked, you know, a few months ago for a, like, what did he ask for? $10 trillion investment into OpenAI to help create the future. I mean, he was lowballing, in my opinion, what is needed for LLMs to do everything that they could potentially do and to continue to evolve the technology. Okay. This is expensive. If you're an environmentalist, the question isn't even what LLM do I use? It's how do I keep from using LLMs? Because you are absolutely using more. I mean, you're using so much energy. Okay. So much electricity, which is burning so much crap, you know, and if you're concerned about nuclear power, holy fuck, you know, when you use LLMs, the environmental concerns around these from people are completely valid. Okay. Let's be clear on that. So, you know, I mean, I use LLMs every single day. Would I call myself an environmentalist? Well, I never really call myself an environmentalist, but I sure as fuck couldn't call myself one if I used LLMs. Of course, I make that same argument for using Netflix. Like you're totally destroying the environment when, I mean, really, like you're killing the earth when you use Netflix. And it's just as true for LLMs. So we're all sinners here. Okay. Anyway, should have just stuck with email. It's fine. not that, you know, when you get enough servers going anyway. Okay. Where were we? So I know I'm just kind of sharing opinion here and I'm not giving you real world examples, of where Gemini is inferior, say to ChatGPT. A lot of it comes down to feature set, and giving real world examples is its own problem, partly because everybody really, you know, asks questions, types out questions, okay, prompts, as we call them. Everybody types out prompts to these LLMs in different ways. And so, of course, you're going to get different results from every single person, quite frankly. So I don't know if there's much use in being that comparative. I mean, so as far as feature set goes, you know, again, at varying times, Google has scaled back the feature set of Gemini. The one advantage that Gemini had for some time back when it was even Bard was that it was accessing Google search data and it was accessing Google search. And so it wasn't just reliant. It didn't have that cutoff date of 2021, like ChatGPT did, where all of its data ran up until 2021. It was able to get real-time data, which was a real advantage. But what does happen, and this is important to bring up, is the concept of hallucination. Hallucination is the technical, and yes, it is. It's the technical term for when an LLM, an AI, makes shit up, okay? When it gets creative and it's, you know, like it's not running off of facts or data that it has access to. It's just making shit up. That's called hallucinating. And Gemini seems to hallucinate the most out of any of the LLMs. And for me, that's a problem. And it also doesn't always respond best to the commands to not hallucinate. Like you can tell, you know, ChatGPT, give it a temperature. Like temperature zero means do not hallucinate at all. You know, many times Gemini doesn't respond to those types of commands and it really will just hallucinate. So you run into a lot of issues with Gemini. If you are already knee deep in the Google ecosystem though, and you're a big user of Google Docs and other things, okay, I get it. It might feel like it makes the most sense to use Google Gemini, especially if you're on Android, because it's probably going to take over Google Assistant and all that. But I don't think it's worth the $20. Okay. For the, you know, really the lack of value I feel that you get out of it. And that's also kind of my problem with like Apple deciding to use them is like, I have not been impressed with Google's Gemini. So why would I want Apple to use them? Again, Samsung is also using Gemini as its back end and Gemini Nano for, you know, on the, well, in particular, the Galaxy the S24. So I'm not impressed by that. And really what it seems like is there is this push against OpenAI. Basically, like all the other tech giants seem to recognize that OpenAI / Microsoft, again, who's heavily investing in, you know, with that fiasco that occurred with Sam Altman getting kicked off the board of OpenAI briefly and all of this, that, you know, they all kind of have to gang up against Microsoft. It's like the 90s all over again, which is kind of funny. That seems to be, you know, the idea here. And like Samsung and Google working together isn't a surprise, you know, but I'm still kind of surprised that, you know, with all the rhetoric of Apple against Google and Android in particular or whatever, for them to be, you know, chumming it up with Google is, anyway, it just shows this is all crap. But, or, you know, like that the tech giants are somehow like there is no point to fanboying over any tech giant whatsoever, because they'll get in bed with each other all day long. And anyway, so while we're talking about this, so you seem to have like what is basically what you could call the Gemini Alliance, which would be Samsung, Apple, and Google, and they're taking on Microsoft. Okay. Microsoft with Copilot, this is where things get a little more interesting, partly because since they are using, you know, ChatGPT, and they're using GPT-4 Turbo, you know, especially when you pay they also have the $20 plan. This is where it becomes very useful. And as far as a business play, is going to be even bigger, because the only thing that people use more than Google Docs is Microsoft Word and Outlook and so on. And, you know, Copilot from Microsoft can get baked into all of those. And it becomes a, you know, that's where things can become a lot more useful. Okay. So, and ChatGPT, now I'm kind of getting ahead on this. Anthropic, in my opinion, actually has the best ratio of giving you exactly what you ask for with minimal prompting than any of the other LLMs. Okay. So in some ways, Claude 3 from Anthropic is actually the best one out there, and you can use it pretty much for free. And part of the reason that's possible is because, you know, Amazon's letting them run roughshod with AWS, which is the largest server structure in the world. So it doesn't surprise me that Claude 3 from Anthropic is the most impressive right now, as far as, you know, its responses. Okay. So I guess we're talking about that for a second here. But while its responses are the best, its feature set is not. And this is where ChatGPT and Microsoft's Copilot end up winning the day over everyone. Okay, because Copilot can more or less do everything that ChatGPT can do. So it becomes a question of, if you're really deep into the Microsoft, especially Microsoft 365, if you're really deep into Office and so on, it's not a matter of Windows. Forget about it, the Windows, because Microsoft has forgotten about Windows. Microsoft doesn't care about Windows. This is a really sad thing. This is really, really sad commentary for 2024. And I mean, it was going on before then even. Like, it is so clear that Microsoft doesn't give a shit anymore about Windows. Everything for them is cloud. Everything for them is Azure. Now, I said that. I said this many years ago, that this is the direction Microsoft was going, was that everything was going to be a front end for cloud computing for them. That's what Cortana was meant to be. Now that's basically what Copilot has become. Okay, everything is about Azure. That's all they care about. Windows, if anything, is just a way to transmit ads to users. Okay, and it's a way to run executables, and that's all. I wish that Microsoft would just hand over Windows to some other company. In fact, honestly, if they gave Windows to NVIDIA, I can't tell you how happy I'd be. That'd be huge. Like, just get it out of there and give it to somebody who would take it seriously, which I think NVIDIA would. And I'll explain more about that when we talk about chat with RTX. Okay. And also because NVIDIA relies upon gaming, and really that's the only other thing Windows is good for, is video games. So we're in a very sad state, in my opinion, because Windows, like, there's no reason that it still shouldn't be dominant. It should be. And in some ways you could say that it is, but it's really not, because what Microsoft is really pushing everybody towards is Microsoft 365. Now, if you're in that space, I think spending an extra $20 on top of the $10 a month, okay, for Copilot is the right move. Like, that's a very smart position. Okay. Because you have most of the features, and recently, in fact, Copilot also baked in, they baked in the ability to create your own GPTs, meaning that you can upload your own data, your own data sets, and have Copilot work within that data set. Also, Copilot is baked into Word now, or is getting baked more into Word and other, you know, Office programs. In fact, the Office program thing is where it actually also beats out ChatGPT. So if you're in, again, if you use Office in any regular fashion, in my opinion, going with Copilot, especially now that you can make your own GPTs with it, is the choice for you. Okay. If you're in the Apple ecosystem, I don't care if they're going to use Gemini. I think Copilot is still the choice for you. Okay. If you use Office on Apple hardware. All right. So I think Microsoft is doing great things as far as this goes. I hate what they're doing to Windows, but I think they're doing great things as far as this goes. And because of their close relationship with OpenAI, which, who knows, maybe they'll consume that someday. You know, they're really winning, because feature for feature, OpenAI's ChatGPT is the best deal going right now. Okay. Everything that you can do and the amount of development being done with ChatGPT from OpenAI is incredible. You know, from DALL-E 3, having access to that, if you're a ChatGPT Pro subscriber, I mean, you know, if you're not tied to any specific platform like Microsoft, Google or whatever, I think ChatGPT is overall the best option if you want the most features. Like, it does have web browsing chats that will specifically access the web, or you can access it without them. This is a very nice feature. Also, ChatGPT with the custom GPT features, now it has like a GPT store where you can get access to other people's GPTs if they make them public, okay, is incredibly helpful and handy to access other generative AI services, okay, like voice generation, lots of other things. I mean, the sky's the limit. With $20 a month with GPT Pro, you can do a whole hell of a lot. You can create a lot of things that no other singular LLM subscription service gives you access to. And really, that includes, in some ways, Copilot, though I'm sure that's going to change quickly. Okay. So in some ways, I'm saying feature for feature. And I mean, the results, again, from basic prompts aren't as good as Claude from Anthropic, but feature for feature, ChatGPT is still king. Okay. And it's the most worth your money. So that said, there is seemingly, and of course also OpenAI recently showed, their ability, you can generate videos, like 1 minute videos, that has not rolled out widely, but it's available. I mean, they're just the latest features in what you can do with generative AI are always showing up in ChatGPT. And so in many ways, that's the best one going. Okay. But that said, how many of us really need all of this, especially to the point of where you spend $20 a month on it? I don't think it's that many of us. And that's where my last pick, last thing I want to talk about gets interesting. And that is NVIDIA's own local LLM model, that being Chat with RTX. Now, I mentioned this earlier, and it only runs on Windows, at least for now, but that's probably going to be true for a long time because of the regular access to the powerful GPUs that, you know, that NVIDIA produces with, you know, the RTX 30 and 40 series. Okay, so you need a GeForce, you know, you need an NVIDIA card, okay, and it needs to be the 30 series or 40 series with at least 8 gig of video RAM, with VRAM. So if you have that, and you have 16 gig of RAM System RAM or greater. Okay, that's enough. It does require Windows 11. I don't think it works on Windows 10. And it's going to take up about, I think it was about 40 gigabytes total. It says 35 on the site. I'm just looking at it here quick, but I know it was about 40 gig when I installed it. And this does, look, it's limited in compared, certainly in comparison to ChatGPT. It's limited in comparison to a lot of the models that we talked about. But what's really cool about this is it's very simple to set up. Okay. I mean, super simple. It's an .exe file. It's a quick install like anything else you would on Windows. Okay. And then, you know, the prompt, like the user interface is super basic, which is great. Cause like ChatGPT is super basic as well. Okay. I didn't even get into the voice assistant features of ChatGPT. That's going to be a huge deal. That's another reason that's worth $20 a month. But here's the thing. You don't have to pay a dime for chat with RTX. Okay. And it will not hallucinate. It will only run on your local data set and work within that. And it works really well. I mean, it's not Anthropic. It's certainly not ChatGPT. It's not those things, but the advantages are it doesn't cost you anything. Okay. And it runs locally. And, and it relies mainly on your data set. Like that was the most exciting thing for me like the whole reason that I got a ChatGPT Pro subscription was the ability to upload my own PDFs and only ask questions within the data set of the books that I upload to it, which has been an amazing experience and super helpful in a lot of my writing and a lot of my research and in many ways, my life journey. Like it's been super helpful to access those things, like upload the whole Zohar and boom, go. It's awesome. Now, you could have privacy concerns around that, for sure, and those are valid, okay? But, you know, also, like, I'm already spreading the Zohar out there. What am I worried about as far as that goes? But regardless, okay, I can do that very same thing with pretty good efficacy using Chat with RTX, using a completely local model that's incredibly simple to set up. So if you have the computer that can handle this, in some ways, because this is only going to get better, and I mean, it's kind of in beta, but I think NVIDIA wants to make the big play here, okay? In some ways, like, I think this is the best option out there, okay? Again, it costs you nothing, you know, as long as you have the hardware for it. And for me, it does most of what I want, what I really want, say an LLM to do. You know, I mean, image generation, okay, that's something else, you know, and certainly you can get in, there are local models for image generation that you can get into, but you have to train them and so on. But I think this is a fascinating idea, and I love the idea that they're pushing for it to be a local data set and locally run. It's not in the cloud. That is really important to me and a great direction for things to go. I think we should have these options, and I think Chat with RTX is really going in the direction that I was hoping Apple would. Maybe Apple still kind of will. And it'll, you know, and they've already kind of laid that out where it's only when you need cloud power that they'll access Gemini. I want it to be completely local. Okay. And NVIDIA is going in that direction. And this is what I mean. I really wish NVIDIA would just take over Windows and just bake Chat with RTX right into Windows, far beyond anything that Microsoft has planned. And I don't even think they really have it planned for Windows. They just don't care about Windows. You can tell, you can see it. You can hear it from analysts that have been covering Windows forever. They know, talk to the developers. Nobody's developing shit natively for Windows anymore. No one, except for fucking NVIDIA, it seems. Like, this is huge. So in some ways, I wish Windows would just go away get out from underneath Microsoft's purview and give it to somebody that actually is doing something interesting with it, which I think NVIDIA is in multiple ways. You know, I mean, to say nothing of gaming, right? I mean, they are engaging in like real development groundwork as far as a lot of this AI, you know, and LLMs go. And anyway, it's kind of exciting what NVIDIA is doing. It's just a shame that they have to rely upon, you know, whatever the fuck Microsoft will, you know, how far Microsoft will let them go. So I really wish that that was the case. But again, if you're not in the Windows ecosystem, then chat with RTX means nothing to you, you know, if you're not using it. So, you know, what am I ultimately saying the best one is? Yeah, it's back to OpenAI. ChatGPT is the king for a reason. It has the most features. It gives you, like I said, its results, depending upon what we're talking about, might not be as good as Claude 3, but they're very good. You know, and you have a lot of very simple commands that you can give it that make sense. And generally it respects those. You know, you can keep it from hallucinating too much. There's a lot of options there. Like I said, though, if you're big into Microsoft 365, you're big on Office, then Copilot makes a ton of sense to have it right there ready for you. You know, I feel bad if you're lost in Office, but there it is. If you're in the Apple ecosystem, I mean, again, like, I'm really disappointed that they're going with Gemini. I get it. There is this kind of alliance, this Gemini alliance, clearly working against OpenAI. But on my iPhone, yeah, I run ChatGPT. So, you know, that as far as what's the best, well, I think I gave you somewhat of an answer. It is not Gemini for sure, you know, but if you're in that ecosystem, I get it why you're going to use that. But what OpenAI / Microsoft are doing is definitely the most feature rich, particularly ChatGPT. But again, also if you're on Windows, like, by all means, give Chat with RTX a shot. I think you will be impressed by what you get there. And I can't say, I don't know if Chat with RTX would work in, say, Parallels, in Parallels emulation on a MacBook. It might, especially if you have the subscription, right? Because you have to subscribe to Parallels. I don't like that model either, where to be able to access, like, the advantage of using a MacBook, of an M series chipset MacBook, is that you get that instantaneous access to all of the memory, whatever happens to need it at any given moment, whether it's, you know, CPU, GPU, whatever. Okay. But then for Parallels to, like, charge $100 a year to be able to access more than 4 gig of video RAM, or, you know, however that works out, I think that's kind of shoddy. I don't like that. And so, you know, you're going to pay out for Chat with RTX, which you really shouldn't have to pay for, if you want to run it even through Parallels. I mean, Parallels is a great job. They should make their money, but, like, damn it. You know, it feels a little stingy on my end. Anyway. Okay. So there you are. There's your answers. ChatGPT, again, is still the king ultimately, but there are some interesting options to look at outside of that, depending upon what platforms you're on. So we will see. As far as predictions go, I don't see ChatGPT getting unseated whatsoever. I don't see Gemini even necessarily really catching up. I am very concerned about Apple's implementation here. I think it might fall flat on its face, at least at first, if not going forward. We will see. I am also open to the possibility that Microsoft, again, might really acquire, completely consume OpenAI into itself. I could really see that happening. But we're going to have to do the check-in in 2020, or when we get to 2025 or later in 2024, to see where things are at. But that's where we're at right now. And again, the worst part of it all is I'm just so disappointed in Apple. I mean, and I don't think that this is rumor anymore about them going with Gemini. I get it. I get it why they're doing it. It's kind of a stopgap measure, but it was in my opinion, is very much the wrong choice. Regardless, we'll do the check-in later on. And of course, more Sovereign Tech to come. I will see all of you, woo, on the other side.